May the words of my mouth and the meditations of our heart be acceptable in your sight, O Lord our God and our Redeemer. Amen. There are times in our life that are disorienting. Often these are times that involve change. There can be times of stagnation as well that disorient us. Perhaps someone has died, and we enter into grief with its dragging weight. Or perhaps a job is lost, or some hope that we've carried is crushed. We can disorient when our family size makes an adjustment, such as a child going off to school or to college. Many a mother and a father know that time, when life is not as busy as it was. What now? Sometimes that question comes with a shade of relief. Sometimes with sorrow, and sometimes both mingled. Or like me, you can retire, only to find that it's far too dull. What now, you keep asking yourself, and finding new ways. You have life skills. How will you employ them? How will you remain useful? Or some opportunity is before us, and it moves us to grow, to deepen, to become. Like going off to college, or like taking a new job, or moving past some old wound that we've nursed ever so long and now need to let go of. Perhaps we're apprehensive. As I've learned, change is a little death, even as it is at the same time a rebirth. Seldom do we choose what feels like death. Often, how we will be reborn is not known, not clear, and not fully of our making. In Luke's gospel today, we are still in the Easter cycle. The enforced silence and just being that was required of the Sabbath has worked variously on the followers of Jesus. The women have broken into the dawn's light like a horse at the starter's gate at the Kentucky Derby, hoping to care for Jesus' deteriorating body. Perhaps they are trying to squeeze a moment of care for their leader, their rabbi, their friend, before the domestic duties of their day take fully over. Only they are greeted by an empty tomb. The dazzling apparition of angelic voices and being. Have they remembered, they are asked, that he foretold of his rising after his destructive death? And they are told he's risen. Off they go, I'm sure somewhat puzzled as well. To who? Well, in Luke's gospel, it tells us they go to the 11 plus all the rest. So there is some massive gathering of waiting people. What does one do with such a tale? We're invited to see that in today's gospel. Two who were not of the 11, but part of all the rest, decide to go off to Emmaus. One of them we know is named Cleopas. Scholars guess that this was a very early morning journey, perhaps after the first rumor of the resurrection, because of the heat in that part of the world would be too severe for this walk to last beyond noon. Emmaus was not of any particular import. It was no place in particular, though it may have been home to one or both of these men. What does one do when one is in grief, when one cannot make sense of death, and certainly one cannot make sense of resurrection, when life is suddenly altered? Often we go to a safe place, a familiar place, something we know. Perhaps Emmaus was just no place in particular, just a walk with one friend, the comforting voice of one, not many. Maybe this is all Cleopas and his companion desired. Perhaps they were a kind of introverted twosome, and too much puzzling talk had gotten the best of them. And now they enjoy their own gentle voices as they remember and count loss and seek quiet together. And yet here in this good company, they are overtaken by another who does not seem aware of the grief or the loss that Good Friday has created for this community and the disrupted hope that has taken over all of them. How often, when you're in a transitional time, do you find it the same? You're overtaken by someone who just does not get your grief, or your worry, or your puzzling about how you will reassemble life. Perhaps we don't even allow ourselves that needful space to sort, to feel, to fall apart, and in time to reassemble. And so we hear in the gospel, "Are you the only stranger in all of Jerusalem who does not know the things that have taken place in these days?" And he asks them, "What things?" And they tell the story, the things about Jesus, who was mighty indeed, and how he was handed over to be condemned to death and to be crucified. And we had hoped that he was the one to redeem Israel. And this is now the third day, and some women of our group were at the tomb early in the morning, and they did not find his body. And they told us that they had indeed seen visions of angels, and that he was alive. And some of those who were with us went to the tomb just as the women had said, and they did not see him. So how is one to make sense, is the text of that gospel. Then the stranger simply says to them, "Oh, how foolish you are, and how slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have declared. Was it not necessary that the Messiah should suffer these things and then enter into his glory?" And then he researches with them the scriptures, opening evidently one by one as they walk along the road, the very place that they had learned to trust for the hearing of God and expand their understanding in God's word. Changes like that, you know. Sometimes all we need is someone who will reach in with us and explore options, help us to find understanding in the places that we trust. We do not need to travel alone. We can take on newness and even lostness in the company of another. All we may need is someone who has just enough insight to help us to reinterpret, to get a new grip, to let go what has failed in our understanding. We just need to be open, to hold out hope in the truth for which we were made, that every one of us is a gifted, beloved child of God. And hope and understanding and wisdom can begin to settle in again. That's all Jesus does in this story, is he lets them see and hear what they most deeply know, even though they do not yet know him to be Jesus. We can do that for each other, you know. Particularly when life is bruised and when we are bruised by it. We can be or come upon another life that is just walking near us. And perhaps that life is headed home or to no place in particular, but quietly burdened. And we can quietly say, "What goes on with you? in your life. And we can then actively listen. The listening to that life being the only agenda that is before us, its meaning before us. And truth, often that is all we really can offer each other, this active listening, and it will be enough. From time to time, we may have an insight that we can gingerly offer to see if it speaks to the moment. Maybe it does. Maybe it doesn't. It's the listening that matters. The tenderness of this gospel story is the willingness to listen. It's the two men listening to each other, listening when the stranger comes upon them, and he asks them, "What are your concerns?" And the story takes off, and the listening settles in and brings meaning. The three arrive at a place called Emmaus, we assume. The stranger is planning to go on, but the listening has now turned into relationship, and the two ask him to stay the night, which was good Middle Eastern hospitality, to care for the stranger. Besides, the conversation had been deep enough to cause their hearts to burn within them. And then it happens. They are at table. The stranger takes the bread, blesses it as any good Jew would, breaks it, gives it, just as had been done at the Last Supper. And just as they realize that the stranger is indeed Jesus, their beloved companion, he is gone. The warmed hearts remained. The care found remains. The biblical stories brought to life remain. The deep hope altering the feelings of deep loss remains. Perhaps that really is Jesus remaining. They have not figured it all out. They need to return to the others and to share. And in the place of sharing, they find that Jesus has appeared to others. Was this the first Eucharist? The first time Jesus was known in the blessing and breaking and sharing of the bread? We have done it ever since, come expectant and listening to this table. We have come here whole and we have come here broken. We have come here in joy and we have come here in sorrow. We have come with lives altered by sin and hope and newness. In times of change, we do well to reach back, to touch promise, to hope again, to be met and to be heard. A little personal story. Like many of you, I was confirmed and first communed at 11. I had been rather insistent on doing it a year early. My family would leave the church by the time I was in my 13th year, and I returned seeking something when I was 18. First off to college, it was a season for change for me, and I guess I was doing the opposite of many people who go off to college. So I looked in many churches for something to happen. It, I called it. I only knew that there was an it that was supposed to happen. It would taste something like the desire to know and to be known and to be met. Finally, it began to happen when I entered Holy Trinity Episcopal Church in Greensboro, North Carolina. A feeling of being met and known, and of all things, the silence and attention that was present in that building before worship began, what seemed to me to be like listening and prayer. Weeks later, I finally presented myself to take communion. I had felt a little unworthy and told by friends I should hold back because of my long absence. But on that day, it happened more deeply than it's ever happened since or before. A shiver ran deeply through me. It was like electricity. It was deeply odd and it was embarrassing. But in time, I shared it with a priest who simply said, "Thank you for sharing." The sensation never happened again. But that once was disorienting and orienting enough for a lifetime. That in those very simple elements, something deep and profound can be met. In so many ways, this altar, any altar, is Emmaus. No place in particular, and yet pregnant with the possibility of meeting Jesus. Maybe he's in the bread and the cup shared. Maybe he's in the care that is given by our listening. Perhaps he's in the one right next to you, in the hope that surrounds that life, in the centuries of time and expectation that exist from our coming to this place. Always he's in the sacred stories told and the promises held. And so often he is gone as quickly as we first glimpse him, like in Emmaus. Yet even in this going, he remains. For a moment, we are changed, oriented, deepened, left hopefully alive. Such is his grace.